Do you recall any things that she spoke about at the convention or at the caucus meetings?
See, in Washington, about how to interview the presidential candidates, that it should not be a total group, but that it should be picked, appointed in a very well-represented group. That issues that should be spoken about, one was that she felt very important was that cabinet position. And about the party pushing women candidates towards running for office. At the convention, she was pushing Humphrey quite a lot, doing a lot of talking for him. And
was she one of the women that were seated in
yes,
the front of the room?
She was seated in front.
Of all those women, which one was the most vocal? Had the most to say? The one that was the leader of the leaders, if there is such a thing.
I guess it was Gloria Steinem. I guess there were three. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug, Liz Carpenter, and Sissy Farenthal. And they were trying to push Sissy Farenthal constantly into the limelight. Hmm. All of them.
Do you think this was in preparation for her vice presidential nomination?
I think so.
Was Shirley Chisholm seated at that front table also?
No, she wasn't invited.
She wasn't invited?
No.
Because this is surprising to me, because she was, as you mentioned, one of the executive council members.
Yeah, she was invited when the presidential candidates, but I guess they felt that she was a candidate for president and that they were going to try to give them all an equal opportunity. But I can remember sometimes, you know, Shirley saying, gee, you know, I did belong to that organization, you know, and so that's why she would send me sometimes, you know, to be there to let her know what was going on. It was like if she was an outcast, you know, Shirley. She was really, really hurt by a lot of things that went on. And I guess that maybe that's politics, you know. You kind of just let it water down a duck's back, you know. And, yeah, there was a lot of times, you know, she was ignored. I think one time even in the Black Caucus, they had this meeting, you know, and two of the other candidates were there and she wasn't notified. God, as the first woman that, I guess she's actually the second woman, but actually the first woman that was, you know, Black and ran for president, I think it was one of the most difficult things in her whole life that she's ever done. And I can't forget it, you know, and I guess maybe that's why I keep going back to it. That the next woman that runs, and I'm sure that if she's angry, I just can sense that she's going to get a better reception.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think that the color really made a difference, too?
I really do. See, let me tell you that the caucus is made up of people from North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And when they have the national executive meetings, all these women are there. You know, and I'm sure that, you know, they're trying to overcome this stuff. You know, that's why they're in the caucus. But I don't think that it's very easy, you know. And I think Chisholm was... I really felt bad. The treatment that she got. And I felt it was because, yes, she was Black. You know, and people were threatened by her. Both men and women were threatened. And hopefully, maybe she'll run again. I don't think she will, but I, you know, would like to see it.
Let's get finished talking about the leaders and your impressions of them. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Mary Clark. You perceived her as one of the leaders.
She was up at the table. Mary is has been involved in politics, I'd say, for the last 20 years. Very, very intelligent woman. Knows a lot about different legislations that have passed, that are being studied. She's been active in the Peace and Free League. What war?
It's the peace.
Peace movement. Yeah. And while we were in Washington, she got thrown in jail because she was in front of a senator's office sitting there. She wouldn't move, you know. She's been involved in for so long, and she knows what she's talking about. She's a very impressive person. She's done a lot of traveling and has been involved in women things for a long time. Mm-hmm. And she started the Los Angeles Political Caucus, and then she went up to San Francisco and helped them get started and came down to San Diego. But she was known all over. She says she's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Her and I have met each other recently, some of the steering committees for the National Women's Political Caucus. When I went up and was very upset that they weren't doing anything for minority women, and I got up there and said, I need peace. Next thing I know, they were passing a resolution to go into the bylaws of the National Political Caucus state why that all material would be printed in Spanish, in areas for those Spanish people. They've never done it, but they passed a resolution and passed.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that you had some, you felt pressure from her. Did this alter your feelings towards her at all during
No.
the meeting? You continue to respect her, but... Just didn't look forward to seeing her at that time.
Anywhere. Because she'd constantly come up, yeah. Then after the whole thing was over, I'd say, Lord, I says, my God, you were a pest. Everywhere I went, you were constantly telling me, you know, McGovern this and McGovern that. And she still, you know, said, well, you know, McGovern. Yeah.
Were there any other women that you can think of that were seated at that table?
I know. She's a congresswoman of Hawaii.
Mink.
Yes, Mink. Patsy Mink was up on the table. Yeah, and she's a very, very outgoing person. Is aggressive, but doesn't frighten anyone away that doesn't know her. She also was surely pushing the abortion thing. My God, I can remember several times interrupting a meeting, and we should get back to this issue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was another issue that she was very strong on.
It doesn't matter, but who do you perceive as the number one leader of the National Women's Political Caucus that women look to at this time?
Well, I guess I'd have to say, you know, Sissy Farrenthal.
Even at that time?
No, not at that time.
At that time.
I'd say Gloria Steinem.
Even more than Shirley Chisholm, though Shirley Chisholm wasn't there?
Yes, even more so. In fact, Gloria Steinem made a presentation on the podium at the convention for the abortion issue. She had to borrow a dress because she didn't have one. She had to put on a dress, a borrowed dress to get up there. And we were all laughing about her having to look for a dress for the whole convention just to stand up on a podium and make a presentation.
Why did she have to wear a dress?
That was one of the regulations, and that was one of the things we were laughing about is, ha, 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 here we are fighting over this abortion thing, and you've got to put on a dress to get up there and make this presentation, and nobody can see her anyhow, you know.
No.
It was just really weird.
Of all of the women leaders, who's the most impressive speaker that captivates their audience and holds the audience's attention?
Out of the ones that were sitting up on mm-hmm. that table? Oof, that's a hard one.
They're all pretty impressive, huh?
Yeah, and you know, they all didn't talk, stay on the podium that long. You know, it was maybe Gloria 15 minutes, and Bella would get up, and then Sissy would, you know, be thrown in there, and Pansy Mink, and who was the other one? Carpenter, Liz Carpenter. But I guess you would have to say again Gloria, because she was the one picked by the women at that meeting to speak on the abortion. You know, she must have been the most impressive speaker to be picked by all the women that were there.
Mm-hmm. How did she establish her credibility at the convention?
She was already known. She'd been traveling all over the United States, you know, supporting women candidates and helping them with fundraisers.
So it was basically her reputation,
right,
that made her a credible speaker, made people want to listen to her. Were any of the women speakers, of the various women that spoke at either the caucus or convention, did any of them suffer credibility damage in any way, or damage to their credibility?
In overall, or just to the women?
Overall.
You talk about men and women.
I'm just talking about women, credibility damage.
No, I don't believe any of it.
Not even Shirley MacLaine? The abortion?
Yeah, that was, I had forgotten about Shirley. Yeah, when she did get up, I can remember people saying, you know, oh, she's given in. You know, she's really not a women's movement person. I was trying to think if any of them on the table had said that. And, you know, I can only recall one person that stuck to her guns, really, was Bella Abzug. And she was very upset at the statement that Shirley MacLaine, you know, made it concerning the abortion. Mm-hmm. And she stated it so. And she criticized her.
What do you mean she was the only one that stuck to her guns? Was she the only one that vocalized her feelings?
Yes, vocalized them. And tried to tell others, you know, if, you know, we shouldn't, there were many women that were already starting to follow Shirley MacLaine, you know, for that changing that one clause. Mm-hmm. And so, Bell, I guess, was trying to influence those people to say, you know, we really, we had said that this is the way we were going to present it, and why should we just change the wording here? And so she, and when there was a meeting, she had also gotten up and stated that. And I was trying to think whether, who was this, the one that sort of came behind following Shirley MacLaine, I guess, was Sissy Farrenfeld.
Why? Or how?
Well, I guess they didn't want to hurt, you know, McGovern. Mm-hmm. And that's why. They wanted him to get in there since he had said he was going to appoint a cabinet woman and possibly a secretary, you know, of state and all this.
So, Sissy Farrenfeld lost credibility?
No, she didn't lose credibility. It was Shirley MacLaine was the only one that lost it.
Mm-hmm. When Shirley Chisholm didn't receive support for the vice presidential nomination, did you support Sissy Farrenfeld?
No, I didn't.
Was Shirley Chisholm nominated at all?
No, she wasn't. I had all those petitions and I gave it to the caucus. But see, they had been setting up a white Anglo woman. That's the only thing I could get out of, you know, why they were, you know. And I figured, you know, gee, just if she's black You know, they're not going to put her up there? She doesn't have a chance because she's black? Is that it or what?
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of hard feelings, you know, and I just really couldn't understand them. Now, maybe changed a lot, you know, and I've grown and could understand, you know, that maybe it's good that a white Anglo woman, you know, could get to be vice president, but by God, she shouldn't forget that there are black women and Mexican women striving and that she should, you know, help.
Mm-hmm.
They help her to get there, you know.
Yeah.
But people tend to forget.
Yes, once you get to that position of power, it's easy to forget about the little people.
You know, I really couldn't understand, you know, why they didn't, you know, make her or nominate her, you know, as vice president.
Can you recall what emotions you felt when the women spoke?
I felt real proud. I was aware. Every time somebody would come up to the podium, I'd say, oh, another man. You know, and somebody else would come up and say, oh, another man. And they had two parliamentarians, and both parliamentarians were men, you know. And so when a woman came up, you said, gee, by God, you know, there's somebody. And so I'd feel really proud, you know, and yay, and scream, you know. Because I felt really good that a woman could get up and you know, make sense and talk about issues. But when we had our regular meetings, I mean, you know, that they were all there and that I knew that they were there, Gloria, Belly, Patsy, Sissy, and all of them, it was no big deal. But when they were up in the Democratic Convention Hall, then that's when I even felt more.
What emotions did the women speakers appeal to or try to elicit in their audience, the people that were listening to them?
They spoke on facts.
Do you think they used logic more than they did
emotions? Yes, definitely. I was trying to think of Gloria's speech, and it was all concerning, you know, facts. So many women have had abortions within the last so many years, you know, and it was a very strong speech.
Hmm.
I think she only had about 2 minutes, too.
That's interesting, because I've talked to some women, they said there's no logic at all in the convention. It's all just pure emotion. So I guess it's in whoever's perceiving it, depends on the
person. Well, I'll tell you, the McGovern spokesperson was all emotion. You know, when he stood up on this podium, you know, and he was said, he's black, Willie Brown, he's an assemblyman.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, Willie? I know Willie Brown myself personally. I thought, boy, this guy has got to be an evangelist. He stood up on this platform and he said, people! I want you to believe what I'm saying, and I want you to give me back my delegation, you know, with this real, you know, reverend type thing. And that was really emotional. I think people, there were tears in their eyes, you know, about. And I sat there and I thought, God, that is the most stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. Because it didn't appeal to me. I was looking for something concrete. I wanted to know why he wanted his delegation back, you know.
Would you say that the logic that Gloria Steinem used, and perhaps other women, when speaking to the convention, evoked emotion? There was a combination of the logic and
let me put it this way. I think that the women didn't need the emotion. You know, I think that it was the figures that would impress the women. And I think that maybe the men that were there, that the emotion was stressed in. Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense. It's different from what I've heard, though, because so many people say, well, women are the emotional creatures. They're affected by emotion. Consequently, as speakers, they would be appealing to the emotion in their audience. But what you're saying here is something that's different.
The women were there to do some work, you know. They weren't there to, expose their emotions, you know. So I that's the way I saw it.
But you did feel that one emotion, pride. When
I felt very proud.
Yeah. I know that feeling because I too feel very exhilarated and just, it's almost like a spiritual uplifting in a way. You just feel so good when you see these women speaking, saying these good things. It makes sense. To not only men and women, but particularly to women, which is new, which is something that's it's different. Hopefully it's going to continue that way. I don't think I have any more questions. Perhaps you could give me some idea, though, before we conclude, of the male delegate response to the female delegates and to the let's just start with, how did the men respond to the women being at the convention, or the numbers of women that were at the convention?
I think they ignored us. Well, like being the spokeswoman, you know, of the delegation, that meant that I was lobbied and wined, dined, and everything, you know. And being the only woman of a delegation that was the actual spokeswoman elected, I was the only woman that was in when these little delegation spokespeople got together. I was the only woman. And sometimes they'd kind of say, "Well, don't you agree?" Because a lot of times I didn't know what they were talking about. You know, it was you give me so many votes, so I can be elected for the total delegation, and. What do you want? And I'd say, well, I want two people to be, a man and a woman. And then when they get up to talk, I want them to have equal time. When your piece is up, then the other one gets up and talks. You know? And all this negotiating going on, I was always the only one. And they would kind of let me out of the picture. You know? And because I wasn't sure exactly what was to happen, I felt... you know, left aside. So I felt that the men, you know, said, well, you know, they're here. They don't know what the hell's going on, you know, so, you know, we can use them. And we need so many votes, and we'll get them to vote the way we want. And we'll wine and dine them, too. But I think that they were also thinking of the future. Boy, next time around, we better search and find out who we'd like to come back next time.
Why do you think they felt that?
I think they felt threatened. You know, I think it was kind of a threat to them. I think the only one that I would say, you know, out of the California delegation for McGovern, that I felt was really encouraging about women and pushing women was Ernie Mason, who was one of the delegates. And John McGuan, who is an attorney here in San Diego. I can honestly say that I felt that they were pushing, you know, women issues. They were threatened by the women. And they weren't out to, you know, run women into the ground at the convention. I can remember Willie Brown, you know, saying, he says, you guys don't even know what you're talking about, you know.
What about the politician's response to the Women's Caucus?
I think Muskie thought we were, you know, playing games. And not... Muskie?
Yeah, why?
Because I don't think he felt like he needed our votes and that we were that, you know, organized. And the reason I say that is when we met with him in Washington, he seemed to be shocked. Like, you know, they were asking intelligent questions, you know, and I don't know whether it was Liz Carpenter or Gloria that said, do you know that we are 50% of the voters in the United States? And he said, oh, is that true? You know, kind of, you know, startled, and then, you know, kind of saying, that's right, you know. But he said no on no cabinet position. He said no, you know, the abortion thing, possibly the child care, yes, mm-hmm. You know. And, you know, he just was there, but he was very definite about, you know, where he stood as He was a man. It seemed like he was threatened and then shot, you know. Mm-hmm.
What about some of the other, Humphrey? What was his?
Yes, he knew that we were 50% of the voters in the United States. But he is, you know, let's face it, he says, you know, the women are people, what do you call them, homebodies. Mm. In fact, he has never, ever passed any, voted, written any legislation, you know, for women. He has voted on. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have one woman hired in any of his staff, besides just secretary or clerical. Yeah, he was real nice. He's a real nice soul, just outgoing, flourishing person. I understand now that he's changed quite a lot, you know, because I follow him all. And the little woman, he talks about it at the Democratic telethon. That was just recently took place, the little woman. So.
What about McGovern?
You know, I felt that, I really felt that McGovern was a very sincere man and honest about what he was wanting to do and that he would fulfill, you know, what he, whatever he said he would do it, mm-hmm. and that women had an equal opportunity. And I felt that when he was talking to us, he was really talking about something that he would do. And he had shown it in his staff. He had passed legislation for women and written it and endorsed it. You know, he came out as a very sincere man.
What about after the abortion thing? Did you still have
a lot
this
of
feeling?
Yeah, I had it. I felt that the campaign had gotten out of hand. I felt that there were a lot of things, principles that McGovern had. But unfortunately, other people were running his campaign and manipulating him and telling him that, you know, he had to calm it down. He followed their advice, and I think that that's what lost him the presidency. Hmm. You know, that when I came back from the convention and just going around to various meetings where I would run into women that aren't even in the women's movement, well, you know, if this guy's going to go around changing his opinion, you know, particularly about these things about women, I sure can't vote for him, you know, things like that. And I think it's just because of his advisors telling him that he should start playing it low-keyed on some positions, that actually women didn't even vote for him. I think that his advisors lost the presidency for him. And that's okay.
What was Shirley Chisholm's response to the Women's Caucus?
What do you mean?
How did she feel about them at this time? Obviously before she supported them, but as a presidential candidate, as a politician at the Democratic Convention, how did she feel about the Women's Caucus?
She still...
And their activities.
She felt they had been, you know, taken in, and that, you know, they would sooner or later open their eyes, and there was nothing that she could do about it. And she says it's really strange, you know. She says here they're pushing all these issues. And I have endorsed every one of those issues and have written, you call those papers? I've written propositions? What is it? It's not propositions.
Just papers will do.
Yeah, okay, she's written papers on each one of them, made public statements, you know, mm-hmm. concerning them and where she stood. And that she had agreed with them, you know. Mm-hmm. And she says it's really funny that none of the women seem to care about what I say. And I guess it was after the nomination was accepted the following day, she had a press conference, and she was saying, I guess one of the reporters asked her, you know, do you feel that the women have let you down? And she said, well, you know, this is our first time participating in the convention, and they were here learning, and I don't condemn them in any way, you know, for what the way that they went.
Did you speak at any time? Did you speak out on an issue publicly in the convention?
Yeah, I was on national radio the night of the nominations. I spoke, Shirley couldn't make the appearance, and she asked me to speak for her. And I touched on the abortion issue. And I can't remember what the other one was. You know,
you gave a little speech.
Yeah,
then.
Specifically, it was a 5-minute thing on radio. And then there was another time that I was on national television. Yeah, because she had a conflict, and so I appeared on ABC television with George Murray, or who's a comedian,
mm-hmm.
And what's the name of the one that's on that girl?
Marlo Thomas.
Appeared with Marlo Thomas, and I appeared with Humphrey. There were about six, and I did the. I represented Chisholm that night. And
was it a debate? Interview source?
No, it wasn't a debate. It was a. I was Chisholm, and I was supposed to talk about, you know, what Chisholm stood for. That she was a congresswoman. Sort of a little summary resume about herself and mm-hmm. why she was running for president. And, you know, I went up there and I said, tell me what you want me to say, you know. And I was going to write it down. And she says, can you go up there and say what you want to say? You know, she said, I'm not going to, you know, run, you know. So I got to say what I did. But one of the things that I did that shocked everybody was that I said it in Spanish.
The whole?
No, I had about 8 minutes, I guess it was. So for about 3.5 minutes, I spoke in Spanish. And then I repeated it in English. And everybody just was, it was hilarious. People were just standing up clapping, you know. They said, that's the first time that's ever been done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Chisholm had watched it on television. And her suite, you know. And when I got up there, she called me in my room, you know, and she said, you were wild. She says, you should have done that, she says, when I was campaigning, you know. And, where else did I speak for? Oh, I spoke when all the delegates of the California delegation got together at the Corte Blue when we were going to pick spokespeople for the entire delegation. I spoke before them. It was, 600 of us, I guess. Everybody, not just delegates, everybody from California was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to speak also, and I spoke why I had worked for Chisholm and why I believed in her. And why I wanted to be the spokesperson for this entire, representing the state of California. I guess that was it. One other time, I guess, was a small meeting with the people like Chuck Manette and a couple of others. It was just a small thing.
Where was that?
Was it one of those meetings, if you know.
It wasn't that important then?
Yeah, it was, it was important, but, you know, for the Chisholm people, you know, it was kind of like we were scooted aside all the time.
Mm.
But I attended everything I could so that I could learn. And it's been worth it, you know, because I've learned so much. And I'd like to go back to another convention. And, I'd like to be the spokesperson next time.
You were this time, though, weren't you?
Yeah, but I'd like to do it next time.
Do it again.
Yeah.
That's all that I have to ask you right now. I'll probably think of things later on after I listen to the tape, especially. But is there anything else that you wanted to add? Things that I haven't touched upon that you think are important that I should know about your involvement with the caucus and the convention?
I'd like to say that we've had a state convention in California that just recently took place and with the National Women's Political Caucus, and that part of the California delegation is Puerto Rico and Guam, and with the convention that took place here in California, there were quite a few, you know, women that participated, and because the convention took place, women are now starting to become aware that there is a caucus, mm-hmm. you know, throughout the different states here in California, and I guess now that what's happening is that women are saying we have to get involved in the gubernatorial election. And now many women are working in various campaigns, and they are women that belong to the National Political Caucus. Like one of the women that was in the Charles Reed campaign belonged to the caucus. And,
well, thank you for talking with me today. It was really enjoyable and sure learned a lot more than I knew before I came here. Thank you very much.